You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people who make them and do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates or advertisers. Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are and wherever you happen to be all around this beautiful planet. Thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Those of you who are joining us for the very, very first time, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you. Be sure you go over to The Kevin Smith Show website at kevinsmithshow.com and kick around over there a little bit. There's a lot of neat stuff. There's some new stuff there, too. So all of you who maybe you listen via your local radio station, that's a good thing. But take this opportunity as soon as possible to get over to kevinsmithshow.com. And if you have not yet subscribed to the K-Files e-zine, be sure you do that. It is an important thing because that is how you stay informed about what's going on here at the show, as well as news around the world that falls within the genre of topics that we discuss here on the show. It is free. It's absolutely free. And we publish it each week. We email it to you on the weekends normally. And it is called the K-Files e-zine, all right? You can unsubscribe anytime you want to. There are no strings attached, none whatsoever, all right? Truly, absolutely free. Now, I guess the past 24 to 48 hours, something like that, the past few hours, we have gotten several emails where people were saying that they wanted to express their gratitude to the person who stepped in to help us with the shortfall in our revenue for January and paid the phone bill for our toll-free number. Some of those folks that wrote to me, that sent me emails, expressed the fact that they simply do not have the funds to make it possible for them to call the show if they had to pay long-distance charges. And the toll-free number is a vital link for them. And they want to express thanks to the person who made it possible for them to continue to be able to call the show and to express their views, opinions, and make comments and ask questions. So once again, to our angel who stepped in to help us, thank you. And on behalf of those who sent those emails, let me express their thanks to you as well. That's one of the things I say all the time, you know, that the Kevin Smith Show is like a family. And, you know, we kind of get to know each other through emails and through the chat room and through the show and telephone calls. And, you know, we sort of get to know each other. And we're like a family. I'll tell you, when I say that our listeners are what this is all about, I really mean it. And I hope you know that. Tonight, my guest is Ted Tweetmeyer, and Ted, as you know, is an electrical engineer, former project manager for NASA, And he has looked into some really, really strange stuff having to do with Mars and the moon. But tonight we're going to talk about the sun. Really weird stuff happening with the sun, and you're going to get to see it with your own eyes. We'll be back right after this. Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring five of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles in free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to AlienSeekerNews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today. Okay, folks, this is what you've been waiting for, your vacation of a lifetime. It awaits your arrival down under in beautiful and historic Hobart, Tasmania. And to make sure your holiday really is a dream come true, you'll be staying at the Bath Street Apartments. Here are just a few of the things that you'll enjoy in your home for the holidays. Stunning water and mountain views from all windows and from your own private balcony or veranda. Modern furnishings, a full modern kitchen with all new appliances, oven and hot plates, fat-free grill, full-size refrigerator, large-capacity microwave oven, cappuccino machine, dishwasher, and enough crockery, cutlery, and utensils to satisfy anyone's culinary desires. The lounge room has an extensive range of electronic home entertainment equipment, including, now get this, a big-screen TV, free digital satellite, pay TV on Foxtel AllStar with over 60 channels, DVD, video, wireless broadband connection, free local telephone calls from the in-room telephone with your own private telephone number so loved ones and friends can call you directly. The bathroom? Wow, the bathroom has a large spa bath, separate shower cubicle, ceiling-mounted heat lamp and fan and hair dryer, and it just gets better and better. Folks, you've got to see Bath Street Apartments, so click the banner over on the Kevin Smith Show website, or just go to bathstreetapartments.com.au. Your dreams are awaiting your arrival. Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com. I'll be there in the morning light. My guest is Ted Tweetmeyer. Ted has been with us before, and we talked about, on one occasion, some very anomalous things on Mars, and on another occasion, some very anomalous things on the moon, and anomalous things in photographs of the moon landings. Ted is an electrical engineer. He is a former project manager at NASA. And tonight, Ted has something different on the plate. And this time, it's not Mars, it's not the moon, it's the sun. Ted, welcome back to the show.
Hello, Kevin. It's good to be here.
So what's the deal with the sun? What's, I think most people sort of, you know, they wake up in the morning and they walk outside and the sun is out there and that's it. That's all we think about it. It's always there. But you've discovered there's something weird happening with the sun, right?
Yes, and good old NASA is the source of the data, and I really don't think this is concocted data at this point. It looks pretty real, and it's very unusual, and it has to do with X-rays emitted by the sun, and shall we say, in this case, a lack of X-rays. There's a satellite known as GOES-10, which is a geosynchronous stationary satellite, and it's parked out there. It does nothing but monitor the protons, electrons, and X-rays from the sun. There's a couple such satellites out there that do this, and something very unique has come up recently regarding X-ray levels that have dropped down to essentially immeasurable levels. We're talking like 10 to the minus 8th power, and for folks to put that in simple terms, it's a decimal point with 8 zeros to the right of it. So it's a pretty small quantity of power that should be coming from our star. Should be, you know, much, much higher than that.
And let me say that I posted a link, the link that you sent me just before the show, Ted, so that people can take a look at the chart themselves. And, folks, if you click that link, it's right beside Ted's picture. And it says, you'll see it, it says GOES, Sun X-ray Flux Chart or something like that. If you take a look at that, the blue line that you will see represents the X-rays being measured coming from the sun. And you will notice that on the 19th, it drops below the red line, which is the baseline.
Well, actually, if I may say something about that,
sure.
Kevin, actually, what those lines mean, and in a way, you're right. I mean, the red line has really become a baseline because it's essentially zero activity. But it, technically, the red line is 1.0 to 8.0 angstroms. That's a measure of wavelength of the X-rays. And X-rays have a wavelength just like light does, where in light, the redder the color, the longer the wavelength, and the more towards blue and ultraviolet, the shorter the wavelength. Well, X-rays, of course, are way out past ultraviolet, the deepest ultraviolet. You get into X-rays and radioactivity, you might call it. But here we see that the blue line is the GOES 10.5 to 4 angstroms. That's an even shorter wavelength than the red line. So the what we're seeing is, to keep this fairly straightforward, and what we're seeing is the longer wavelength has pretty much disappeared, longer X-ray wavelength. And in looking at this 24 hours after I discovered this, we can see the average energy of the X-rays that are still there is also going down.
Yeah, it's now we also, I think, should explain that this is based on Greenwich time, right? Greenwich Mean Time?
Yes, it is. That's right. That's a very good point. So it's about 5 hours ahead of East Coast time and 6 hours ahead of Central and so forth.
Which is why, though we are sitting in the United States on February 19th, the chart shows data up through February 20th, because it already is February 20th, Greenwich Mean Time.
Yeah, and we should just also point out to our listeners, Universal Time is the same as Greenwich Mean Time, really. They're both related to the Greenwich Meridian and Meridian in Greenwich, England.
So when we see this data for the 19th, it would have been on the 18th here in the United States.
Yes, yes. And in that graph, those little white tick marks along the bottom there represent 3-hour intervals that this is taking place at. So you know, we can see that the, you know, that one period of time that this dropped to zero was nearly 3 hours long.
Well, and it's nearly 3 hours when you look at the data for the 20th. It's been down almost to zero for almost 3 hours, for the past 3 hours. That's current data.
That's right. That's pretty much right up to the minute to right now to where we're at. That's right.
So how is it that the sun is up there and it's shining bright and it's going through its normal fusion activity and yet not producing X-rays?
Yeah, or the X-rays it is producing are so low that, at least where the satellite's sitting, that they're so low that they're basically reaching immeasurable levels. And this is pretty doggone curious and fascinating because, you know, one of the huge byproducts, and a fairly annoying one, of fusion research is X-rays. You know, when they fire up these fusion reactors we have on the planet that only will run microseconds, they have to evacuate everybody, and, you know, they have to be behind shielding because the process of creating fusion does generate tremendous amounts of high-powered radiation. So it's amazing when you think about this that, you know, this is happening, but the sun is still there.
How can the sun still be there? How can it still be going through its fusion process, Ted, and not produce measurable amounts of X-rays?
Okay. That's a great, great question. Now, that's going to lead us into a very strange area, something I've been researching for a number of years. And I think, come to think of it, Kevin, I think we did touch upon this on one of your other shows. And that's related to time jumps. And this is a sort of a paradigm shaker in a way. I mean, we tend to think of time as just as solid as concrete, that, you know, it's going to keep marching along at a fixed pace and a fixed rate. Well, now, you know, they swore up and down that you couldn't change the speed of light. You know, Einstein, here's a great example of how relativity can be so wrong. Einstein said if you slow down a photon, you would release unlimited amounts of energy. That's what he thought. He reasoned that out. Now, unfortunately, he's been proven wrong, and the scientific world has had very, very little to say about it. Just a couple years ago, at a place called the University of Rochester, a Professor Boyd Patterson, he slowed light down to 38 miles per hour with a tabletop apparatus. And we're not talking about some huge, billion-dollar contraption. I mean, this was a pretty straightforward device to slow light down to 38 miles per hour. And his laboratory is still there, and the city is still there where he lives, and there was no big bang or noise. It just, you know, took place. So, I mean, the theory of relativity has already been shattered, you know, and that you can do this. And in another laboratory, they not only slowed light down, they stopped it completely, held it in a vacuum, suspended. I don't know what you would call it, but they basically, you know, created matter. They call it a condensate. They held it suspended, and then they sent it on its way again, back to the speed of light. And again, Einstein said, well, it would take, you know, infinite amounts of energy to accelerate anything to the speed of light. But, you know, it was just a laboratory. They didn't have infinite amounts of energy. So now, those are just two theories right there that have already been proven to be incorrect, but have held in mainstream physics for, you know, nearly 100 years as immutable laws. Now let's look at time. Okay, the general theory of time. well, you can't time travel. You would need infinite amounts of energy and so forth and so on. And, you know, you cannot time travel. Well, that's in itself something that's questionable because it hasn't been proven to be true. It's all pure theory. Now, by the same token, let's suppose the planet Earth jumped in time. Right? Let's not try to figure out how it could do it or what could cause it, or perhaps even if there's some race of beings that has the technology to do it. Let's just say it jumped in time. I think we could compare that to standing next to a completely placid pond. It's like a sheet of glass around sundown, and you throw a stone in out there in the pond, and nearby you throw a slightly different, bigger rock in. What happens is the two stones, of course, almost instantly disappear from sight. But the effects they had on the surface continue. Now, the Earth is basically, according to current theory, orbits the sun because of a warp in space-time, you know, caused by the huge mass of our star, 93 million miles away. Well, what happens if this Earth disappears and reappears, even for a split second, so fast that maybe you don't notice it? But could this not, you know, the sudden absence of this huge mass, you know, which is linked to our sun, could it not cause an effect on the sun, not unlike the stone thrown in the pond? And perhaps that's what these sudden blips and disappearances on the sun are, that there maybe are time jumps taking place.
Something just occurred to me as I was picturing all this in my mind. Gravity, this force that keeps us spinning about the sun, is either a byproduct of or the producer of this warp in space-time. If we had an approaching brown dwarf that was getting some a little bit close to us, close enough to begin having effects upon our sun, is it possible, if you view the sun as sitting in the center of a cone, a funnel, if you will, and the Earth is a ball spinning around the inside of that funnel, like a roulette wheel?
Yes.
And the brown dwarf approaching, if it had enough gravitational pull to pull the skin of that funnel momentarily and pull the Earth out away from the sun momentarily, could that produce what we're looking at?
I would be probably crazy to say, oh, that's not possible, because I mean, the basic premise of science is to say most anything is possible until you prove it's not. So I would say, I think you have a good hypothesis there. I mean, a brown dwarf is a collapsed star, you know, which is the fate of some stars, depending on their original mass, whether they become black holes or brown dwarfs or what have you. And could you possibly be referring to the planet often discussed named Nibiru, which is supposed to orbit a brown dwarf, which the two travel as a pair throughout the our solar system?
Well, possibly that. I was thinking more in terms that NASA put it when in 1983 the IRIS Project chief scientist said
We have discovered something out there. It's huge. We don't know what it is. And then there is a star chart, a map, if you will, that has been found that has its origins in NASA that shows a brown dwarf where no other star charts show one, near Earth. If planet X is in orbit around this brown dwarf, if it's Nibiru or whatever it is, and if that brown dwarf is incoming, I would think it's got to have some effect. Now, perhaps it's not that it pulled the skin of the funnel, the wall of time-space warp that we're spinning around. Perhaps it's not that. Perhaps it's pushing against the sun and merely pushed X-rays back toward the sun.
Hmm. Yeah, there are some that claim gravity is a push force and not a pull force, so...
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, I mean, it's... Yeah, it's certainly not beyond the realm of possibility, you know, and that's one of the things that, you know, is particularly nice if you're not constrained by endless peer pressure and peer reviews that can perhaps unwantingly highly restrict what you think or even are allowed to think, or certainly what you're allowed to talk about when you're a scientist. And I guess I'm fortunate that I'm not locked into that mode of thinking.
Well, and I think it's good that there are scientists that are not locked into that mode of thinking. And although this has nothing to do with what we're talking about, it's a pretty good example. I reported here on this show about some scientists, some geneticists, who have been working with some genetic treatment to genetically cure diabetes. Had a little bit of success with it. And what they were doing was using a particular protein that they were inserting into a virus, which then inserted this protein into the genetic code. Problem was, the virus was unpredictable. And some people had real problems with the virus. Or not people, but animals. Some of the animals had real problems with the virus. And so the scientists, three of them, said, well, to heck with the virus, what happens if you just inject this protein? They did it, and they used all six groups of mice with diabetes were cured. They didn't get better, they got well. Now, that's within the past week that came out. Now, there's three guys dealing with a disease that everyone says that's not curable. All you can do is treat it.
And, of course, we know what companies would like to keep on treating it for time and eternity, don't we?
Yeah, but I think those days are numbered because these guys have discovered a cure. And they did so by not being bound by that peer system. They just said, what the heck, let's do it, let's see what happens. And they found the cure. Now, it'll be a while before it's on the shelves for the rest of us, but what an amazing thing. Simply by just letting their minds take control instead of letting the politics of science take control. If we did the same thing with astronomy, and some are, then we can explore these ideas that we're talking about here. We're headed into a break, and we can, during the break, we can explore them all we want, let our minds take flights. But what if this is an indicator of an approaching brown dwarf, our very, very large planet? All right, folks, we'll be back right after this break. More with Ted Tweetmeyer. Are you looking at the sun?
somebody find my phone. You see, I don't remember nothing. I just found myself alone. Somebody needs to help me. Cause now I'm knocked out on a limb. Yeah, with nothing to protect me.
And we are back. My guest this evening is Ted Tweetmeyer, and we are talking about some really strange stuff that's happening with the sun. Now, you want to be sure, just a reminder, if you have not yet subscribed to the K-Files e-zine, be sure you do that. It is free, and there is really no reason why you should be left out of the loop when there are thousands who are in the loop. So just go to kevinsmithshow.com, you'll see the link, and just click that and subscribe. That's all there is to it. You'll get an email when you subscribe. You're going to get a confirmation email. It's got a link in it that you have to click to confirm that you intended to subscribe. If you don't click that, you won't get the K-Files e-zine, all right? So be sure you complete the process there, all right?
Ted, when we left for break, I had brought up the possibility of this planet approaching. I don't know if such a planet is approaching, but I have had guests on this show that assured me and the audience that not only is it approaching, that there is actually some photographic evidence of it existing and that it is approaching. I don't know. I haven't seen that evidence myself. But let's talk about that in terms of the mechanics of a time jump. Just as it may pull on the outer skin of the time-space warp that we're rotating around like a marble around a roulette wheel, or it may push against the sun and perhaps be pushing those X-rays back toward the sun, is it possible that its approach could be causing time jumps?
Well, it could be. I have learned that NASA apparently has a telescope set up down in Antarctica to monitor that they call the brown dwarf planet pair that are apparently hurling through our solar system into our direction. And, you know, it could be this is what the Mayans knew about 2012. You know, that's certainly a possibility.
Well, now, if it were pulling, if it were to pull, I described a funnel, and the Earth, spinning around the inside of that funnel, if you go fast enough, it stays right in the same track, with the sun in the center of the funnel. And if you pull that outer skin, it momentarily is pulling us away. Well, that away from the sun. That outer skin that I'm talking about is that sort of wall of the time-space warp that that physicists and astronomers say that we are rotating around. So if you pull that wall out, you have warped time. Would that not produce a time jump?
Well, the interesting thing is that gravity and time appear to be two sides of the same coin, and in fact, gravity might actually be time. Now, there is a difference in time that's measurable from sea level to when a mountain climber climbs to the top of a high mountain. When he comes back, his watch is different than one that's synchronized. Not by much, but it is a measurable amount. And the same thing happens with, you know, astronauts that go up on the shuttle. So apparently there is a change in time the farther you get from the surface of the Earth. So, you know, we can quickly hear, you know, here we can quickly see, rather, that, you know, the relationship can be somewhat complex between the Earth and the Moon and the Earth-Moon pair as opposed to the sun and so forth, and then you throw in the, as you call it, a rogue planet, if you will, or a rogue star coming into our system, that can make life very interesting. You know, this opens up even yet another avenue, since we're doing a whole lot of, what would be the term here?
Speculating.
mental exercises tonight.
All right.
And that is the moon, based on many theories and based on a lot of things, apparently was put there. It wasn't blasted into orbit from a chunk of the Earth or anything like that. It's in a nearly perfect orbit. The moon has a virtual perfect size fit, you know, over the sun, hence eclipses. I mean, there are a lot of numerous indications, you know, everything is designed to be that way. So if we have, and also I should add, the moon is known as a stabilizer, and when they've done simulations of the Earth's mass and supercomputers, without the moon, the Earth would develop a tremendous wobble and it would not be as stable as it is. So the moon tends to act like a flywheel in a way as well. It keeps things in balance, you know, not unlike the little small screws on an old mechanical watch. You know, they used to put little small screws on the balance wheel to balance it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so the moon is functioning kind of like those little tiny screws do to keep things in balance. So now here comes this brown dwarf that's going to come barreling into the solar system, and there's not a thing, not a darn thing anybody can do about it. Not a thing. There is no known technology that's going to deflect it. But There is one possibility. If when the brown dwarf gets here and the Earth isn't here, then the Earth won't be affected if the Earth is somewhere else. So if the Earth time jumps to another location in time, it can miss it. It's the same kind of thing that accidents. Okay, there was one time years ago, my wife and I were heading out. It was a snowy day, and I backed out of the driveway, and I said, oh, heck, I didn't set the alarm system. I drove back, you know, punched in the code, then we left. About 6-7 miles from the house, we witness a suburban-style... Are you still there, Kevin?
Sure.
Oh, okay. I was getting kind of a tone in the phone.
Yeah, I hear that, too. I'm not really sure what that is, but... We get funny phone activity sometimes.
It's all right. So anyway, so several miles from the house, we witnessed a suburban school bus, truck-type school bus, lose control and go into a field and rotate over several times. And it was ahead of us not more than, several hundred feet up the road when it crossed our path. You know, and we were able to help get those kids out of that. And if I hadn't, you know, that simple act of adding a half a minute onto the trip, we would not have been there. You know, so you can't always tell what one thing will or will not lead to another thing ahead of time. But we do know that, you know, if there's a car accident somewhere, if one of the two parties involved, say it was a collision between two vehicles, if either of the two parties didn't leave that day to go somewhere, then they wouldn't have hit anybody. And so if the Earth isn't here through some design, perhaps, when the brown dwarf shows up, then maybe nothing will happen to the Earth this time around. Because the Mayans and the Sumerians talk about these, you know, several thousand year long cycles that the Earth goes through. You know, there have been civilizations on the Earth before. You know, they have dug up objects in marble deep in the ground, like nails and other objects that should never be there. You know, we're talking about marble that's taken out of the ground that never saw the light of day since the Earth was formed. Well, how did those things get there? You know, in a mountain in out west, about 1 mile in the mountain, they find dinosaur remains. You know, they shouldn't be there. But what if there were massive upheavals? You know, that we're talking upheavals of a scope that we can scarcely even comprehend, that almost turn things inside out, and then the Earth starts over again. You know, so perhaps if this is a brown dwarf that's coming into our neck of the woods here, maybe that's what happens when it goes by. You know, the poles flip and all havoc breaks loose everywhere. You know, and things are started over again.
Is it necessarily a fact that if the poles flip, if the pole flips, if that happens, is it necessarily a fact that there will be catastrophes, or is it just that the water will run in a different direction when you flush the toilet?
Well, that's a very good question. I mean, we know. There's two kinds of poles. I think we've got to really be more specific, I suppose, here, because you've got the magnetic poles, which more or less align with the rotational north and south pole. However, of course, the north pole, which is something my website started tracking a few years ago.
We're into a break. So we'll talk about the poles when we come back, all right?
Okay.
Okay. Sorry about that. it takes over, and we just have to go with the flow.
We'll be back right after this. Did you know the Kevin Smith Show selects one of its very best shows each week and turns it into a free podcast? Well, it's true. You can download free Kevin Smith Show podcasts right now and get a free fresh podcast each week. Do you want to start building your own library of Kevin Smith Shows? All you have to do is visit our website at kevinsmithshow.com and click the free podcast link. They're yours for the download. We are back, and we are talking with Ted Tweetmeyer. Ted, whenever we went away,
you were about to get into the pole shift, and I assume that where we're headed is the difference between the axis of the Earth and the magnetic pole.
Yeah, so what I was starting to say is that there are two poles. There is a magnetic pole, and then there is the geographical pole that we know of more commonly. There is a deviation between the two, and the North Pole tends to move around a little bit. Right now, it's several hundred miles. The magnetic North Pole is several hundred miles from the physical North Pole, which is the center of the axis of rotation of the Earth. So there are some that believe that the you know, there could be a flip of where the magnetic poles are, which is thought to be the result of a process deep in the earth that generates that field. And that magnetic field is extremely important because high-speed particles from the sun, which are trapped in the upper atmosphere near the North Pole, create the aurora borealis, the northern lights. And but it's more than just a night show, because if the magnetic field wasn't up there, those high-speed, high-radiation particles would be bombarding the Earth. So what you're really looking at is the Earth's natural defense system doing its job. If that wasn't there, we could be in a world of hurt the next time the sun has a coronal mass ejection.
So the magnetic field basically works like the Star Trek force fields or shields around a starship.
Yeah, the magnetic field has effects on charged particles. And it's actually the same principle in a picture tube or in a computer monitor tube, where the electron beam that scans the screen is moved simply by very precisely controlled magnetic fields, which are generated by coils. So the electron beam passes down the neck of the picture tube through these coils, and it causes it to scan the screen. So that's a little microcosm of really what's going on up in orbit, where those, you know, it's really a magnetic trap is what it is. It traps those particles high up. The radiation is so high up there, it's staggeringly high. It's so high the shuttle cannot do polar orbits. It would create lethal doses of radiation if the shuttle was to pass through those trap zones. So it never does. It never gets near those areas.
I was thinking about this time jump and also thinking about articles that I've read about our magnetic field and the radiation of which you speak. And the thing that comes to mind is an article that I read that said that our magnetic field around the Earth, they drew a picture of it and a depiction of it, and it shows sort of a clover leaf effect. Mm-hmm. All right, yeah. And it was absolutely full of charged particles because there had been so much radiation coming from the sun at the time of this article. Well, these time jumps, if that's what is happening here, whatever it is that's causing the X-rays to drop essentially to zero, that's giving our magnetic field around the Earth momentary rest. That might not be a bad thing.
Well, you got a good point there. I mean, that maybe that's part of the natural cycle of things, or perhaps by design. You know, and to just briefly touch back upon, we were talking about the poles a minute ago. You know, we talked about the magnetic poles. Now, you know, if they were to rotate, yes, compasses could become somewhat unreliable until people understood how to use them all over again. But if the rotational axis of the Earth were to shift even a few degrees, the havoc that would create, the tidal waves, and endless problems, you know, I mean, it could be a real disaster to civilization around the Earth. Areas that are desert could become flooded, you know, areas that are lush and green can become desert and so forth, and, you know, the results of even a fairly small pole shift could be quite catastrophic. You know, life on Earth exists in a very small span of temperature. But human beings only tolerate a relatively small temperature span. You know, and before you get the coats out or the air conditioners, but if you go more than, you know, 50, 100 degrees past those points, human beings can't tolerate it. And space has temperature extremes. You know, out there in space, where we are, if you're outside of the atmosphere, you're looking at surface temperatures of about 400 degrees in the sun and about 400 below zero in the, you know, in the shade. You're looking at huge temperature extremes, and our Earth is shielding us from those extremes. So if something were to perturb the rotational axis of the Earth, the results could be, you know, beyond anything we could comprehend.
All right, let's go back to Planet X for a moment, or Nibiru. I think, you know, a lot of the writing on this now has kind of settled into that there is a brown dwarf, that it is our sun's binary twin, and that it has five planets around it. Now, I do not know how people know there are five planets around it.
That's news to me. I only knew of one.
Yeah, I've been reading about these five, all right, and one of them is Nibiru, and that's what people are saying now.
Yeah, right. Wasn't there something about Nibiru having a having moons or a moon, I believe, as well?
Yeah, I think so. But regardless, this very giant object headed our way, if indeed it is, and for the sake of our discussion, we'll say that it is. The theory is that the brown dwarf does not itself pass through our solar system, but the planets around it, one planet around it, is far enough from it that it does swing through our solar system. And that would be Nibiru. All right. Assuming that's the case and this thing is incoming, do you think that we are looking at graphical evidence here in looking at the GOES chart? Are we looking at graphical evidence of time jumps? And if we are looking at graphical evidence of time jumps, would there not be some other measurable way of knowing that time has jumped? Wouldn't the atomic clocks have to be reset?
Okay. Now this, what the this whole theory I've been discussing on this time jump issue is something that started out much smaller. It started out with observations by myself and others that there were repetitions in real life. You give a case in point. The same person's witness coming out of a building that only has one exit, and they come out twice, a minute or two apart. Okay? You pass the same car twice, and yet the passenger knows you didn't. You know, there's a repetition in the news or on a radio show, a live radio show. There's a quick repetition over a few tenths of a second. There's a number of, you know, there's these little, how shall we call those, irregularities in the flow of time could come in almost any form. And yes, I suppose one could come up with rational explanations for all of them. Or could they?
Well, we'll have to wait till we come back from this break to talk about the rational explanations. When we come back, we're going to open the telephone lines, and you can call with your questions or comments and talk to Ted Tweetmeyer. We'll be back right after this.
standard sound. Wait on A Street, we bang the drums. I made some friends for the future to come. So we walk on the freedom trail. Saw the place where the patriots fell. Walk through the commons, sat down for a while. I saw some parents walking by with a child. Buster Knights, guided by potential lies. Buster Knights, and I'm high in the sky, but it feels so bright. Buster Knights, guided by potential lies. Buster Knights. Wonderland, had a look at the promised land. Drove up north where I spend the night. Breakfast at Thrift Food in the morning light.
Call Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
We are back. My guest is Ted Tweetmeyer.
Ted, you want to continue with the thought that you were telling us about evidence of time jumps?
Yes. There are a number of accounts of people that have posted their observations. You know, they're from various parts of the world on our, on my website, and they've talked about some of the, you know, the bizarre repetitions in real life, and that seems to be what they observe is a repetition of something, like a hiccup in the flow of time. I think that's one way you could put it. So, you know, and then began to connect certain other strange phenomena with, you know, some of the activity with the sun. In the past, I did this a couple of years ago, and found that there seemed to be some correlation with bizarre solar activity and some of these repetitions or jumps in time.
All right, let's go to the telephone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, this is Trey in Atlanta.
Hello, Trey.
Hello. Look, I'm glad y'all were talking about this topic because the picture you were talking about, Kevin, it's on the 1987 Pioneer Science and Invention Encyclopedia, and it's www. If you want to get the picture, it's www.nepanewsletter.com/pioneer.html.
All right, now which picture are you talking about?
Well, the one you were speaking of earlier, it's got the diagram. And what it's got, Kevin, it's got the, what this originally is a Pioneer 10. It says Pioneer 10 became the first craft to pass into interstellar space in 1983. And it's got a picture of the, where the Pioneer 10 should be on this map, and it has got 50 billion miles away. It's got dead star, and then 4.7 billion miles away, it's got a 10th planet. And over here on the left, it says It says, now, will someone please explain why this diagram clearly shows approximate location of planet X? Planet X is presented as a matter of fact in this representation. Some have suggested that the paths of Pioneers 10 and 11 were chosen as to get a triangulation fix on planet X, a suggestion this chart would support. So that's what this is from. And I remember you mentioning that. But what I was going to talk about was we know that, that Jupiter causes one of its moons to have a volcanic ice eruptions or something, keeping it the liquid from freezing. And we know that Saturn was affected. The atmospheric pressure of Saturn, or that of Saturn's moon, went up a lot. And everything else is going on in the solar system. What you said would clearly make sense about the different effects that another planet or a dead star would cause, and also with all these satellites that of late that just keep going, and just, you know, that normally would stay in orbit, but now they just keep going as if something is you know, gravitationally affecting them. Do you think that that is what's causing all of the increased underwater volcanic activity, which is some say is why the ocean is warming, not because of anything except for underwater volcanic activity? Do you think that's causing it?
What do you think, Ted?
Well, you bring up some great points there. They've examined the magnetite down in the ocean floor, you know, which takes on the imprint of the Earth's, particular north-south alignment when, you know, it's formed, and found that like a couple hundred times in the Earth's past, the poles have flipped, the magnetic poles I'm speaking of have flipped positions. So, you know, that, you know, could mean many different things, and certainly probably has a very big impact on what happens on Earth when that does happen.
Trey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Let me throw this into the mix with that question. Here the Earth is in orbit around the Sun, and the circular motion of the Earth, of course, would tend to pull it away from the Sun. The gravitational pull of the Sun keeps us from just flying off out into space.
It's the exact same thing happens with the space station and what keeps that in orbit.
And then if you have, you've got the Sun with its gravity pulling on the Earth, and then you have an approaching brown dwarf, its gravitational effect as it approaches begins to pull on the planets and try to pull them away from the Sun. If that were happening, in fact, wouldn't we begin to see that there would be a lot of geological forces unleashed on the Earth as it's pulled in two different directions?
Yeah, I would think it would perturb the orbit a little bit. It would certainly interfere with, you know, perhaps it would interfere with the path of the Earth around the Sun to some degree. I don't even know if we'd actually be told that it's happening. That's another story.
Yeah, but I think it would increase certain activity, such as volcanic activity. I would think it would also create some really strange weather, some strange climate.
Yeah, I think you're right. The one thing I don't really subscribe to, because I don't see the logic in it, is this business of planetary alignments. You know, I really don't see where they're going to have that big of an effect on the Earth when the planets all line right up. You know, when you really think about the distances involved and the gravity from each of these, you know, they don't add up like magnets, you know. It's not the same thing as magnetism, you know, and so they'll line up, okay, big deal, you know, and that doesn't, you know, last but, what, hours maybe, and then it's over, you know. So I think there's more to it than planetary alignments, and there's certainly more to it than this business of the, 26,000-year rotation of the Milky Way, you know, because these Earth ages, according to the historical records, are only a few thousand years. So that's just a fraction of the rotation of the Milky Way, you know.
All right, let's go back to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Hello, yes, it's Kevin from Iroquois Falls. Long time no see, Kevin.
How are you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Good.
I do have a comment.
Uh-huh.
I've got a question for Ted, and I got a question for you, Kev.
All right.
Okay, I want to clarify something about the five worlds around Nibiru.
All right.
The one world, one of the planets around there is actually, well, it's theorized, or it's apparently is the homeworld of the Anunnaki, and that Nibiru acts more as a base. They use that as a base because since it does come in such a close orbit to Earth, it can come here. That's just speculation. I just want to clarify the fact about the other five worlds and what some people mean about that. And my question for you, Ted, is that you worked for NASA for quite some time, I understand, right?
Well, I did a number of contracts for them, you know, yes. I mean, I've been for many other different facilities, yes, and as a project manager, yes.
Okay, my question for you, are you aware of the satellite that they have in the South Pole, that satellite system has actually been tracking the Nibiru? They've been tracking its progress into our solar system since 1984. And my question for you, Kevin, is are you ever going to have a Zechariah Sitchin on the program anytime soon?
Okay, let me answer that, and then we'll let Ted answer. The answer is no. He does not do radio interviews any longer.
Okay.
We have tried, and he simply does not do radio interviews any longer. So, Ted, take a shot at it. Kevin, thanks for the questions and the call.
All right, you're welcome. Have a good night.
All right.
Okay. My understanding from some material I read recently is that there's a telescope set up to observe Nibiru down there in the South Pole, the Antarctic area. That was the last thing I had heard. The satellite, as far as I know, that orbits the, you know, that's somewhat stationary over the South Pole, is supposed to be looking at the ozone hole. So that's what we're told. I mean, that's my understanding on that subject.
All right. Folks, the telephone line is open. The telephone number, toll-free, is 1-800-289-1092. If you are outside of North America, that toll-free number does work, but it's not toll-free. It's just a phone number. So if you're outside of North America, we have set up a way for you to be able to participate in the show without having to pay for an international long-distance call. And you do that by sending me an email. Send it to flash@kevinsmithshow.com. Only if you are outside of North America, okay? Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Michelle from Quebec.
Yes, Michelle.
Yes. With his theory that if Nibiru comes in with a brown dwarf and we go into a time shift there, that's like a time quake, eh? If I understand it right, and that must be always going forward because we find buildings under the ground, so it doesn't go backwards. And so my question is, we know about black holes, and we know the theory that if we get closer to a black hole, time slows down, and seeing black holes are growing, how much of a time shift would this happen? And would all life on Earth notice a time shift, or would it be just trees and nature that notice the time shift?
Okay. You bring up some great questions. One of the things that happens with time shifts is that computers and mechanical systems are fooled by them. The human mind, which doesn't really have a physical, you know, the thought process is non-physical. You might say it's at the quantum level. So, you can observe time shifts, time jumps, but around you, instrumentations and other things recording it will show nothing happened. You know, in this, there's a great example of time being altered with the rovers on Mars. And this is a little lengthy, and I don't know. I don't think I've talked about this on your show yet. Have we, Kevin?
I don't think so.
Okay. But are we coming up on a break? Is it going to take a moment to describe what was observed?
No, we're not coming up on a break. We do have the telephone lines lit up.
Okay. Well, I guess maybe I'll have to cover that another time, but there...
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
Okay, well, let me just briefly try to describe this. There's a sundial on each of the rovers, which was just, you know, a black shaft with a ball on top, sitting in the middle of a disc. And the disc had in each of the, you know, well, you say the word corner, but equidistant to one another were color reference tabs to calibrate the color cameras. I noticed that a gear-like structure appeared at the bottom of the shaft on the sundial, and it wasn't there before. And others I spoke to that had, were quite familiar with these images said, that wasn't there before either. So it's like five people now total, myself and four others, have said that, you know, that was not there before. And yet I went back and looked, and all my images that went into my book, What NASA Isn't Telling You About Mars, even my printed copies now show it's there. But it wasn't there before. So someone, shall we say, went back and altered time, maybe suggested to the designers, hey, why don't you just put this thing around the base of the shaft for who knows what reason. All right, so they went back, you know, some, 8 years now since it was designed and made, and spoke to the people on the project at Cornell, and they added that. Now, so that was one example of where apparently you can alter the past and change the present, which answers a key question about time travel. Do you create a new timeline, or do you just simply alter the current one? And it's looking more like you don't create a new timeline, you alter the current timeline. So I apologize if I'm a little off your question there, caller.
Okay, so what he's saying, what he was asking is, it seems that if there are time jumps, that it always jumps forward.
That is apparently the case. That has been a conclusion myself and a researcher I work with down in South Carolina. He and I both tend to think it is a forward jump. And we thought maybe 7 years ago when we first saw this, that, you know, at that point we were several months ahead. And even the seasons were acting that way. You know, they were acting just plain wrong. And you could sense it was wrong, but you couldn't put your finger on it.
All right. The phone lines are open. Some of our callers decided not to wait, but 1-800-289-1092 is the number, and the phone lines are open. We have a flash message from Australia. This is from Carl in Perth. And he says, if something is having an effect on solar X-ray emissions, might it not be possible that other X-ray emitters will also exhibit unusual behavior? In the medical world, millions of X-rays are taken every day. If something was powerful enough to turn away solar X-rays, perhaps we would expect to see a flurry of failed medical X-rays, depending on alignment, etc. Let me you comment on that, and then I will comment on it.
Okay. I'll try to keep my comments brief. I don't want to lose the callers. I really love to hear from you folks out there, and so does Kevin. It's a different process, I think, here. We're looking at two totally different things. You know, medical X-rays are generated by sources and X-ray tubes, whereas the sun is a whole different process, and I can't say I would think that everything will be affected equally.
Yeah, my comment would be that with solar X-rays, you are dealing with very intense radiation, but it is dispersed throughout space around the sun. When you're dealing with medical X-rays, you're dealing with a short burst of very focused X-ray, traveling a very short distance, very short distance. So I would not expect that you would see failed medical X-rays as a result of it. Does that make sense, Ted?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, now, folks, the telephone number, 1-800-289-1092, is open for you. What about time jumps? Maybe you have experienced some sort of a weird time jump, and you just sort of did a little double take and said, well, that was weird, and then thought no more about it. But maybe you've had that happen. I know I've had, Ted, on this show a guest who talked about passing the same tractor trailer rig with the same numbers on it three times in a span of about, I think he said in the span of about 2 hours, and this tractor trailer rig never passed him. And yet he and his wife were driving down the highway, passed the same tractor trailer rig three times. So that would be along the lines of what you're talking about. Now, let me ask you this. If time jumps are happening, do you think they are something that is happening because of the approaching Planet X, or do you think it is happening because it is man-made?
I believe there is a technology that does it, but I'm not so sure that we have the technology to do it.
So what do you mean by that? Who's got it?
I've believed for some time that there is a, let's just say, a group out there, a race, if you will, that's kind of watching over us. I mean, statistically, we should have been hammered by some pretty good-sized asteroids right now. The potential hazardous asteroid list is now approaching 1,000, and these are continent killers to planet killer-sized chunks of rock out there that have narrowly missed us on numerous occasions. You know, and of course, we have to consider, this is going to quickly add, consider that, you know, it isn't just the size of the Earth, but the Earth has a gravitational field that wants to pull things into it that come anywhere, you know, within 100,000 to maybe 200,000 miles. It can reach out and grab them depending on how fast they're moving. And yet we haven't been hit. So I think there's perhaps something out there keeping an eye out for us.
Okay, let's go back to the phone line. And caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Louie from Connecticut.
Kevin. Yes, Louie.
Good evening, Kevin, and good evening, Ted.
Good evening.
Hi.
I have two things. Here in Connecticut, between last June and last July, it was like summertime, but it seemed like the leaves off the tree were coming down like fall.
Exactly.
Yeah, and another, and the second thing is, if this planet Nibiru is the gravitational pull, what would that do to satellite? Wouldn't that affect the satellites up there?
Oh yeah, the satellites are in a fairly delicate state of balance. You know, they sit out in orbit about 22,000 miles out, and you know they're very accurately placed. I mean, if you have a satellite dish at home, the dish has to be aimed within 1 degree of where the satellite is, or you lose the signal. You know, they're fairly tightly packed out there in 2 degree spacing. So, you know, communications would be greatly disrupted worldwide if there was even the slightest shift between the Earth and the Clark Belt where the satellites are.
Okay, that's it. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. 1-800-289-1092. I'm sorry, Ted, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, no, that's okay. I was just saying you're welcome to the caller.
Ah. Potentially, if this planet X is on its way in, potentially we are in for an excessively rough ride.
Yeah, it could get bad. It could get worse than your worst nightmare, I think is maybe a good way to put it.
There are people who are looking at what's happening with the sun now and predicting that, in fact, we may be headed into another little ice age. And we've got about 2 minutes here before break. You want to address that?
Yes, I've heard those theories, and I began looking at the issue of the 11-year cycle versus the fairly recently discovered 16-month solar heartbeat, as the National Science Foundation calls it. And this is where wave theory may play a role in helping understand the relationship of the two. You know, and we can talk more about that maybe later after the break, but there could be interaction between these two that can cause, perhaps the things we're seeing with the sun, the decreased X-ray activity as well. I mean, as well as the change in weather. So I think global warming is, I don't think it's a very well-founded theory. I mean, that's just my opinion anyway.
So, there was for a while a measurable increase in temperatures on the planet, but not enough to account for the very rapid decline of polar ice, sea ice, Arctic sea ice.
Yes, that's true.
Now, the theory that is put forth by Robert Felix is that it's ocean warming that's happening, and it's happening because of volcanic activity under the oceans. And we now know that scientists have agreed that the ice in Greenland is melting because of magma under the surface, and it's heating it up.
I think Greenland's also one of the countries that uses geothermal energy quite extensively, too, if I remember correctly, because, you know, they have, you know, tremendous heat from the Earth's core not far from the surface.
There was a time when the Greenland was farmland, and now it's, well, not now, but fairly recently, within the past few years, up until the past couple of years, it was completely covered in ice. And then now that ice is melting, but they're saying it's because of the magma movement. Well, that would tend, I think, to support what Felix says about the volcanic activity is heating up the oceans. But that gets us back to what's causing that to happen. Don't know.
Right.
All right, when we come back, let's talk about the wave theory that you were talking about with the sun. And we will continue in just a couple of minutes. And the phone line is open at 1-800-289-1092. We'll take your calls right after this break.
Gathering to cover up the lies that the dark cloud. get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
Call the Kevin Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
We are back, and Ted, let me say, I just checked that chart again. We are now over 3 hours, where there is essentially almost zero X-ray emission being recorded. But it's got a couple of little bumps in there where it bumped up slightly and then back down. What do you think causes that?
Yeah, I just dropped you a copy of that chart. I don't know if you saw that yet, but I just sent it to you. At least says to me, at least there's some kind of a signal coming from that one particular instrument. It's not like it's completely flatlined out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's something coming from it, and I've not heard of any failures to do with any of these satellites either, and usually it makes a little bit of news. So as far as I know, the GOES 10 satellite is still healthy. So on that basis, then, the X-ray levels have dropped to essentially immeasurable levels. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, certainly the sun is still there and it's still working, but it's changing, you know, and it's changing. And looking at these three-hour spans, looking at the repetition and the complexity of the waves, I'm not sure that this isn't some form of manipulation, because there's an incredible similarity over the last two 24-hour spans in the complex waves we're looking at.
Yeah, they look almost identical. Let's go back to the telephone and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Bob from California.
Hi, Bob.
Hi, I just had a quick question.
Mm-hmm.
It was regarding when it came to the time shift. I was wondering, like, when mapping out the fabrics of space mathematically and in physics and whatnot, I think it probably has a lot of uncertainties when it gets to the areas of black holes and whatnot, trying to explain and map out mathematically these areas. I'm wondering, in retrospect to the great power of the kind of gravitational effect slash, thing that's going on with that area, in retrospect to the time shifts that we'd actually experience here, how does that work out mathematically, and is the physics supporting all of those kind of theories on a level where we can actually observe any actual major difference? Thanks.
Well, those are great questions. I'm not sure I can answer that, you know, because we're entering a realm of almost a new frontier. You know, they were certain, you know, astronomers were certain, for example, the composition of comets until they blasted a penetrator into one and discovered it wasn't necessarily made out of ice. It was more or less an asteroid. And I think comets are nothing more than fast-moving large pieces of rock. And there's even along the lines to answer you, there's even a theory that, you know, we're an electric universe we live in, and that, there's huge electrostatic charges out in space, which would make sense, because electrostatic charges tend to build up when there's nothing to discharge them. So I think there's a lot that's not well understood. You know, we touched on the Einstein's theories, a couple of which have been proven wrong, and yet the physics world is silent about that. So we have a real problem with accountability from the physics world. I think that's a big issue. You know, they do these fusion experiments, and when they don't work, they just say, well, we got to build a bigger machine, you know, and they keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. But there's no accountability for when things don't work the way they claim they're going to.
I had a guest on the show who talked about Einstein's theory relative to time, that as you approach the speed of light, you experience time dilation. He said super colliders prove it's not true, because when you fire a particle near the speed of light at a particle that is suspended, essentially stationary, they could never collide. He said they both have to be experiencing the same time phase in order to collide.
It's an interesting idea.
Makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, and you don't have to be traveling near the speed of light to see time effects, you know, like we talked about earlier. You know, mountain climbers see them climbing high mountains. Astronauts see them. Apparently just getting far enough, traveling far enough away from the surface of the Earth is enough to start to see time differences.
All right, now, as we travel up, let's say we go up to the top of Mount Everest, is gravity less at the top of that mountain?
That's it. And gravity is slightly reduced, not a tremendous amount, but the flow of time is also slightly reduced. You know, I think one of the best examples of this, you know, to me, the best example, the concrete proof of all, are the Voyager spacecraft. They have been out there transmitting since 1976, you know? I mean, that in itself is utterly incredible, okay? They're still working. Uh-huh. NASA, about 2 years ago, stopped tracking them. But they're still transmitting. And they shouldn't be. They weren't designed to last that long. And, in fact, the transmitter uses a traveling wave tube, a vacuum tube. All right, and it should not be sending anything back. The tube should have died a long time ago. But where are these? These things have left the solar system some time ago. They're not near anything. And I think what happens is when you're out there, away from any gravity source, gravitational source, the flow of time slows down. So the flow of time is almost, you know, almost nothing on the spacecraft where it is. And it's not because it's moving, it's just because it's away from gravity.
Yeah, and caller, we'll get to you in just a second. And what you would have in a super collider or a collider is that the particles are at the same level of gravity, and therefore they're in the same time phase, and that's why they can strike each other, though one is moving at or near the speed of light.
Well, it could be.
Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Well, this is Charles from Albuquerque.
Hello, Charles.
Hello.
Hey.
Well, I tell you, this has been such a wide-ranging conversation you have had that I hardly know where to begin.
Just pick up a moment in time.
Well, I'm wondering about the, you're ascribing the possible fluctuation in the X-ray flux to the time jumps. Do we know what actually produces X-rays in the sun?
That, you know, I think the biggest problem we have is we don't really understand the sun completely.
That's what I'm thinking. I mean, couldn't something be temporarily blocking this intermittently in the sun itself? I mean, we have no idea.
Well, that's true. You know, the satellites just pick up that whole, you know, one side of the sun, so it would have to be something that would stop the emissions over a tremendously huge area, you know, thousands of times the size of the Earth.
Well, maybe some process that takes place in the whole sun.
That could be. And, you know, this gets into the area of the 16-month solar heartbeat, which was discovered a while back. And, And there's an ebb and flow in the sun, and perhaps this is tied to the solar heartbeat.
I'm wondering if, because we have only a satellite, we've only had a satellite up there for a while, how do we know this X-ray flux change hasn't happened before?
Well, I've been watching these satellites. I can only speak for myself. I mean, they've been online since actually the early days of the Internet. The same charts, you know, there was, you know, the data's been pretty continuously available, you know, where you can see it updated every 5 minutes around the clock.
But for how many years?
Huh?
But for how many years?
About 10.
So for only 10 years we have data?
10 or 15 years that I know of we have data, that's right. I know it's
a small period of time in relationship to the periods that we're talking about.
That's true. You're right. I mean, that is true.
Well, as a follow-up to that, in that period of time, have we seen the X-rays drop like this previously?
I can't recall ever seeing them drop this low or see specifically the wavelength of 1.0 to 8 angstroms go to a straight red line now going into its third, maybe fourth day. You know, this is very unusual to see these levels down in the mud, so to speak.
Well, I have to bring up the other possibility, obviously. Wouldn't a straight red line pretty much indicate a failure in the sensor?
You would think it would. There are occasional blips on it. But what's also interesting, though, you see, is that the other wavelength on the same satellite of 0.5 to 4 angstroms is also down quite low. It's, you know, it's just above the straight red line.
Maybe it's about to fail.
That you're saying that one is about to fail? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, maybe it's also degrading for some reason.
Well, you know, I mean, that's not beyond the realm of possibility. I mean,
well, I'm just thinking these other simpler explanations may have some weight versus time jumps.
Yeah, I mean, we're just talking about possibilities. You know,
right.
We can't say for sure.
Have you ever seen data? Have you ever seen what the data looks like, Ted, when sensors fail or when the satellite fails?
Yeah, what happens is when they don't have data, there are actually gaps in the charts. These charts, which are continuously scrolling, showing 3 days all the time or three 24-hour periods, there'll be just actual gaps, just black space, you know, when the data's missing, and, you know, which could be caused by any one of, you know, many things in the chain of signals between the satellite and where these signals are recorded. So this doesn't look like missing data. And I haven't seen anything anywhere that says there's a failed sensor for that wavelength. And, you know, I would think that the other sensor for the other wavelength, you know, would also would be different. You know, it'd be radically different than that one, showing relatively normal activity.
And let me say, if you have the blue line with no gaps in it, it is receiving data, and it is recording X-ray levels. But it's recording X-ray levels at below normal level. And
yes,
right at this moment, I have the ability to get rid of the red line. If you get rid of the red line right at this moment, it is dipping further down. It's been for 3 hours, a little over 3 hours, it's been sitting right on top of the red line. It is now dipped right into the red line.
Yes, it has.
And you know, Charles, if there is no space, if there's no black area interrupting that blue line, then it is recording the X-ray level. So the sensor is there and it is working, and it's recording the level, but it's recording it at an unusually low level.
Yeah, sensor's putting out something. I would say all we can really say is that it's different, and we don't know why.
Well, that is true. That is true.
Yeah, that is what we're really seeing.
Well, thank you very much for your response. I'll pass you on to the next caller.
Thank you so much for the call, Charles.
Good night.
Thanks, Charles.
Yeah, I think it's important for people to realize that what we're doing is simply looking at data and speculating what could it be? What could it mean? The fact is, though, that there are lots of articles out there right now by scientists who have been looking at the sun who are scratching their heads, puzzled as to why, when we should be at solar maximum, there is virtually no sunspot activity.
That's true. That's very true.
And sunspot activity is, you know, what happens is it's a magnetic storm, and it eventually explodes. And when it does, it sends a wave of X-ray out into space. And then, of course, those incoming X-rays are what, you know, the people who own and manipulate satellites try to turn those satellites away from the incoming X-ray storm so that they don't burn up.
Yes.
And if you look at, if you go on the internet and just look at all the articles about the sun right now, the scientists who study the sun and who they're experts on the sun, those guys are saying something is really strange here. Something is up. Something isn't normal right now, and that has caused them to speculate that we may be headed into another little ice age. I pulled up an article, Ted, during one of the breaks, where it was a report on the weather here in the United States on the 18th. And we're having cold weather tornadoes in the south and unusual amounts of freezing rain and snow in the Midwest.
Yeah, I think we even had a tornado, I believe, in Ohio recently, too.
Mm-hmm.
That's just, like, unheard of, you know, especially this time of year.
Well, you know, I grew up in Tornado Alley. I grew up in Dallas, Texas. The last year that I lived in Dallas, we had a day in which we had 23, I believe it was, tornadoes.
Mm.
It was a bad day. One of them touched down at Love Field Airport, tore up some planes. It's the only time in my life where I heard civil defense sirens going off, and they were evacuating people from downtown Dallas, getting them out of the skyscrapers. It was a bad day. Lots of tornadoes. I'm very familiar with tornadoes. I saw one that day myself. Now, the reason I tell you that is because I don't know of any tornadoes in my entire life. I don't know of tornadoes happening in the middle of the wintertime.
No. No, that's it. And especially up in Ohio. I mean, that's got to be a first. They don't normally get tornadoes there. I mean, it's like in New York State, where I live, you don't normally get tornadoes. You know, it's just almost unheard of. It's rare, but it happens, but it's almost unheard of, especially in the winter. It just doesn't happen in the winter.
Well, it's happening this winter, and quite obviously there's something afoot that is different. Our climate has changed, and it cannot be attributed to global warming, but may be attributable to ocean warming, which is then in turn changing the climate patterns. But what's causing that?
Well, to be attributable to weather control technology, the Germans have admitted they're using chemtrail spraying. And, you know, our own military has admitted by 2010 they're going to rule the world's weather. And that's only 2 years from now. But I suspect maybe they've already got a very good start in doing so. You know, the geometric shape in the Eye of Katrina, you know, the sudden right angle turn it made as it was traveling west and suddenly made a right angle 90 degree turn and headed straight toward the southern coastal U.S. All these things tend to indicate there's some kind of monkey business going on. And, you know, it's like a 5-year-old playing with a loaded gun. Sooner or later, something very bad is going to go wrong, you know?
Well, if Katrina is, as you say, evidence of manipulation, I would say that was that's something that went very wrong right there.
It was. I learned from the inside some people in the government that they actually did try to steer it, but then they lost control of it. And maybe they should have just left it alone. There's actually strangely enough, there was actually a Pentagon-shaped eye, and I mean a perfectly shaped eye in the center of it, you know. Now, did you ever see any polygon shapes in a toilet bowl when you flush it, you know, wherever you see a vortex? No, I mean, circular is the rule of the day, but this thing had a polygon shape in the middle of it. You know, that was no accident.
Well, I'll tell you, I hope that if, in fact, they were trying to drive that thing, that whoever was doing it has finished their student driver training and knows what they're doing now, because that was a mess.
It certainly was. And unfortunately, as you and I know all too well from our own past work experience, that they never leave well enough alone. There's too much arrogance and certainty that, oh, we'll get it right next time, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, Ted, we're just about out of time. If you will, give us your web address. And I know you've got some articles about this anomalous activity on the sun and lack of activity posted on your website. So go ahead and tell us your web address.
The web address is www.dataforscience.net. D-A-T-A, the digit for science.net. And the book about Mars is www.bookonmars.info, just like it sounds.
All right. I don't know that I've got time, and I certainly think we won't have time to respond to this, but here is a flash message from Italy that just came in. It says, Friday, my neighbor's red Doberman puppy, one of her valued show dogs, ran from the yard. It bolted down a side alley, and everyone was running to get the dog. A storage building, much like a Quonset hut, is where I headed, and sure enough, the dog went right for it. He was often groomed there and given treats there. My neighbor nearly was hysterical, ran into the same end of the hut as I, to block the way. I thought, no, go to the other side. In a moment, and I swear this happened, I was on the other side. She went over the edge screaming and pointing at me, and several people asked me how I did it. To be honest, I was disoriented for 2 days, even nauseated. Now I'm wondering if I wasn't caught up in some time shift, totally wild conversation tonight. Sounds like something from that new movie Jump, doesn't it?
It does, and, you know, there is something going on, you know, and people aren't crazy. These things do happen, and people just have to have a little more faith in themselves and not let everyone around them convince them they're crazy. I mean, these things do happen.
Yeah, they do. Well, one thing is sure, we're not in the middle of a time jump, and you know, we've gone almost 2 hours talking about the sun and the anomalies thereof and the possibility of a time jump. This X-ray level is continuing to decline as I look at the chart. Let me ask you to wrap this up by telling me, in your heart of hearts, what do you think this means? We have 1 minute.
Well, I think the X-rays fit into the scheme of things, and it could be something that could be an indicator of something to come. You know, I did take a glance. I have on the screen the current images of the sun at various wavelengths, and it is devoid of sunspots. I mean, it's fairly homogeneous in nature, which is very unusual.
Okay, Ted Tweetmeyer, thank you so much for being with us. Stay on the line with me for a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, my friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you'd like. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Tomorrow, my guest will be Dr. Brooks Agnew. Be sure and be here. I'll be here. Until then, so long, everybody.